Hello, welcome to Careers in Tech Show. I'm your host, Patrick. On the Careers in Tech Show, we explore the stories, secrets, and skills of people who broke into the tech without a computer science degree, who are here to share their story with us to impact your own career goals and those around you. We want to help you see the possibilities when it comes to breaking into tech from a non-technical background, as well as working your way up as either a product designer, product manager, or software developer. Our mission is to cast the light before you to see the bigger picture and realize what is possible if you take that critical step. The show has got episodes with CEOs, CTOs, product managers, product designers, and other people breaking into tech from a non-technical background or without a standard college degree, as well as two boxes for skills like negotiation, personal branding, teamwork, and many more. So if you want to learn and improve your professional and career goals, you are going to be right at home with us. If you are looking to break into tech from a non-technical background, you can enroll in ScaleEmbassy Product Accelerator Program. So kindly head over to www.scaleembassy.com and enroll in one of their available courses. You will have mentorship and support from world-class professionals. So please head over to www.scaleembassy.com and enroll in one of the courses, and we'll get you started and ready for your first technical role. Great. Today with me is Jason. Thank you very much for joining me here today, Jason. Welcome.
Oh, thank you a lot. It is quite a huge opportunity. I'm really, really, really grateful for it. Thank you a lot.
Awesome, Jason. Jason, before we dive deeper into many of some of the awards that you had, can you please tell us how you broke into the tech industry, your journey into tech? Kindly take us through how you got into tech.
Awesome. Thank you. So basically, to start with, Blessed Jason Mwanze, I guess three of those names.
Okay.
Three, Blessed Jason Mwanze. And I'm from Zambia, Africa. Passionate about software, and not only software, but primarily being problem solving and hoping I with a lot of individuals alike, including you and everyone else watching, to be part of, you know, the anchor and co-foundational builders of the future of African tech. So basically, I'm an enthusiast, love problem solving problems, and I would say I'm obsessed with software. Not literally, just love it. I'm a bit obsessed with it. And you know what obsessed people do. You fail to draw the line sometimes, even in reality situations. So how I began, I think it was all from that being the fundamental reason, curiosity and the zeal to solve problems, more especially for Africa. That was a huge driving force. So you find out that... I began my journey when I was, I think when I was young. The journey started as, you know, the idea and the dream of becoming a scientist. Okay. At some point. Yeah. So through that, you know, I started school later on before I could know about all these things. So I remember starting my school in grade 4 because I was way too old by then. And where I was, where I grew up from, school was kind of very, very difficult opportunity to access. So you find out that people would walk kilometers and kilometers just to go to school on foot. And somehow I was granted an opportunity, I think when I was about 14 or 18, somewhere there, to go to Lusaka, Zambia, which is a town section. It's a city, actually. It's a capital city of Zambia. And that's where I somehow, you know, that's when I was put in an environment that could allow me to explore more into what I was initially intending to do, that is build things, because, you know, that's what little scientists do, I guess. Yeah, so from there, I began my grade 4 and at a local community school. And within the first term, I moved to a different school, and rather than continuing grade 4, they skipped me to grade 5. And second term of the same year, the third term, I came back at a former school, and rather than continuing grade 5, I was skipped to grade 6. So I did from grade 0, 4, 5, 6, one term each, which is about, I think, 3 months or so, each term. So it was quite tough. I teach myself a lot. So literally had little fun whilst I was young because there was no time at all. And moreover, it wasn't a problem because I loved learning by default. So it became the fun thing to do for me. And from there, I think that's when I now had a full year, seventh grade. I passed, very clear. Then I was given an opportunity to go at Kablonga Primary. It was by then Kablonga Basic School. That was in 2014, I think. So it happens to be that in Zambia, 2014 was probably the first year when computer studies was being introduced in school.
Wow.
And yeah, where I was coming from, no phone, no computer, except my aunt had a computer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was no computer or, you know, no devices. I never had a device. And this whole journey actually did not begin as a passion for computer or software engineering. You know, as I said earlier, it began as a passion for creating things and solutions to problems. And I continued my journey at Kablonga Primary by then, eighth grade, that is. And I was very quiet to a certain extent, but, you know, very curious. And I used to quiz with teachers. I would take up the whole debate, the whole class, you know, because if I know that the teacher's talking about this and you studied about that, and then, you know, pupils would really hate you because you're always disturbing, mm-hmm. not in a negative format, but curious to learn more. So it happens to be that during that same time, one of our math teacher called out for me and was like, hey, young man, you at the corner? Because I would always love sitting at the corner. At least, you know, I didn't get to worry about who's at the back. So I look at everyone like full-fledged from the angle. So from there, one of the teachers called me and he was like, hey, young man, I want you to be the class representative for computer studies. And I'm like, computer studies, yeah, it's a subject we're learning. Everything good in the world is new. I'm from the village. I've just spent about a year plus here. Okay, fine. You can't say no. So I was to figure out the rest along the journey. And from there, straight after class, I walked home. Then I asked one of my brother if I could use his phone. He said, no, of course. Then I asked one of my cousins as well if I could. My brother is my cousin too, so I had a lot of cousins. You know, where in Africa, we have this extended family where everyone is your brother. Yeah. So my aunt had a computer though, and the son, he was way younger than me. He used to like playing this Zuma game.
Okay.
And it would appear to be that every time I'd want to get in and watch them play, they would be like, hey, come on, shut up, shut the computer. You're all going to spoil the computer. And I would get really pissed off because all my friends are there, but the moment I go in, they would shut everything up, then we'd go to sleep. So, you know, through that, it kind of sparked the whole momentum for me to somehow learn further because I really wanted to experiment. I was just appointed as the class representative and literally I had no idea what to do, where to click, or anything like that. So at some context, I think I also was moved and accelerated by the fact that the environment where I was, you know, had no enough resources to enable me to research more and learn more and explore in the field of creating things. Because initially that was the main drive, you know, somehow being of purpose.
Okay.
So it's a lot. You can say purpose, more inspiration, zeal, whatever you can call it. But I think purpose driven by this obsessive need and thirsty for the mind to learn and acquire information was the anchor and foundational ability. So living in a community, an environment where access to these things was limited, somehow sparked up this continuation of, you know, energy for me to keep on learning and somehow find ways on how I can explore. So I had an alternative. So my parents would give me, of course, some money to go to school and board a bus, public bus, and you go to school. So the genius idea was, okay, I save up and I wake up very early in the morning, walk to school, so that after class, I can use that money to go at the internet cafe and experiment there. So that's how it all now started from there. And so what I could do was, after class, I would go straight to internet cafe, start Googling things. That's how I even learned how to use the internet anyway. Mm-hmm. I asked the guys at the local cafe, I hear that you can research for about anything on the internet. How do I go about it? They taught me I could see people browsing emails and all that. Then Google, people Googling, and I was like, oh, okay. So guided me on how to Google things. From there, it became a whole library. It's like everyone's brain, I can access it if I have a question. So that was a dangerous thing because then I knew no limit. Now, I started spending more time researching, asking questions. And after that, I would go to class, you know, with an upper hand because I somehow resist on something. And then, I could share with my pupils. But you know how it goes in school. The moment you want to share something, then they'll go like, you see a review post here and all that. And by default, I just don't like people. I mean, not as in not liking people, but I don't know. Crowds, let's call them that. Isolation is better. It was better by then. It's still better. There's a lot that can be done in isolated some context. So from there, I could share, of course, what I learned with my fellow pupils. And teachers used to like that a lot. And I never used to like the fact that a lot of people now were like all over me because, you know, I have to share and teachers would be coming to like me to do that. And in continuation, like that was during my 8th grade. 9th grade now, we had one computer studies teacher. Remember, it was the first subject. The first time computer studies was being introduced in Zambia as a part of the curriculum. So one of the teachers now said, being busy, you know, as the only teacher within the school. So what he would do was, okay, he would ask me, he would delegate, ask me to if I can teach another class when he's out. It was a huge task. I was like, okay. How do I get started with that? It was the first thing. I have to study. I have to do all these things. But, you know, that's the funny part about motivation or somehow enthusiasm. It knows no limit. Like, you can use your brain to the fullest when you're inspired and motivated, you know, towards letting go. You know, that was for me to learn and build stuff. I needed to learn how to build things, but I couldn't do it if I didn't research and share. So that was a new challenge on the table. I had to move extra now. I had to ensure that my research is, so I reached at a stage of like, okay, I had to balance up because from school rather than studying, I'll be going to the internet cafe to do my research, experiment, start learning. And I was introduced to programming. Oh my God, big problem. First time I was being introduced to programming, I understood that I can literally create anything virtually. That concept was mind blowing. It made it worse. So the pattern continued. I had little time to play. And in fact, playing wasn't a thing anyway. So that created a whole new job for me. Straight from class, I had to do a lot of research. And from there, late at night, that's when I would get time maybe to study. And I would find myself studying less and doing more research. However, the good news is, whilst doing research, I could research on a lot of things. You know, the internet gives you quite, you know, this summarized information sometimes, and most of the time. In school, traditionally, you would have books, and then you'd be required to read a whole lot of chapters for you to get a definition of one simple thing. So in the internet, I can just ask a question directly, instantly get an answer, and digest on that. So somehow it gave me an advantage in researching and getting summarized information about certain topics. So from there, online, of course, I got interested into hacking because almost everyone who is somehow programming today or writing code, the first thing was, how do I hack a device after watching some weird movie?
Okay.
Excuse me. Yeah, so that also was a catalyst. I mean, a catalytic impulse that drove me into learning more about computers. You know, there are these fascinating things where if you can think it, it can happen. And God, here comes you, likes creating, and someone tells you, if you can think it, you can make it. Damn. I was like, heaven. So I continued from there. I started now learning HTML or CSS. I would literally not sleep. I would go to school drunk, not drunk as in drunk. I don't drink, I don't drink. But my mind would be drunk.
Lack of sleep.
You know. Yeah. So it was a bad thing for my health. But as I said earlier, I think there's this thing that obsession does. It literally, you know, makes your body somehow immortal to a certain extent. That you can do a lot of things within the shortest period of time. However, it was for the better. And during my ninth grade, I also, you know, in the process, as well as relating at school and all that, found out that there's Facebook. That was an interesting thing because I came to learn about Facebook, I think that was 2015 or so. So what I did was, okay, Facebook, almost everyone in school is talking about this Facebook thing. I had an idea of what internet is, and I knew, okay, there are social network platforms now that I have come in light with Facebook. So what I did was find out that you can create pages where you can put your content and people can see all of that. So what I did there was, I created a page. You know, I mean, PPUs and my fellow PPUs would go on Facebook, of course, to just socialize and communicate and share all these things. And I thought of, okay, if I can put what I was supposed to share in class online, then PPUs might like this. So it was a brilliant idea at that time. I gave it a try, and then I told my teacher that, I've created a Facebook page. I'll be sharing with my fellow classmates what you teach us, if I grasp anything, and they can be doing the same. So the teacher agreed with it. And lucky enough, the headmaster was like, allowed it. Like, one day just caught out and said, okay, tell your fellow PPUs about it. I went ahead and did that. And what happened was, you know, PPUs started engaging and we could interact like that. So the whole idea of knowledge, acquiring knowledge and learning things and building things, all upgraded from there. Because thinking of Facebook, I was like, if you can do this while someone is home, Jesus Christ, what else can I do? So, you know, all these questions, what if golden question became a whole huge thing. And I realized that, okay, with Facebook, I couldn't change everything. However, I had the ability to make something like it. Damn, one exciting thing. So from there, I continued sharing my content. And the first, I think, I'm sure the page is still available. It's like Kablonga Primary Computer Studies page with Blessed Jason Mwanza. I think the title is something around that. I don't remember last time I touched. But anyway, it saved its purpose. So if you remember, the initial idea was somehow solve problems. So all of this was part of the pattern, you know, or the journey of how I really got into software and programming. So coming into understanding that, you know, you can create almost anything, I started looking for problems to create. So that was in my ninth grade. By the time I was in my 10th grade, after graduating junior secondary, that is ninth grade, I went to Kablonga Boys Secondary School, still within Lusaka, Zambia. And there, that's when I continued my research and exploration into solving problems. At the time, I couldn't do much. Like from ninth grade, I could, of course, just do my research. I was just love learning. So I could go to the library sometimes if I'm stressed. Read books on black holes and all these things that now I don't even use, but anyway, maybe I might use them. But that drive still is the passion that was fundamental towards, you know, all this software journey. And during my 10th grade, that is, I then got more interested in software, you know, so I started with the same model, save up money rather than board a bus, walk to school, and then go to Internet Cafe, and because I never had a laptop, you know, so my family could not afford to buy me a laptop. That's the first fundamental thing. So I didn't have one. And the only resource I relied for that was with the cafe. I could save my work there. Sometimes I'd go there and find someone has deleted it, or their computers have crashed. So it was quite a painful journey. So I could build literally my whole project on someone else's computer, and then someone else comes and deletes it. So it was painful. But no, I just never gave up. Just never gave up. So I one day was online, and I searched for a song. I can't remember what song it is. And you know, Google was like, no lyrics and all that, and then I could read while singing. Oh, that was a good idea. And I searched for a local song. I realized we don't have that. You see, and I was like, oh, okay. This would be great. What if we can make something for our local music lyrics? You know, like we all have English songs out there in their language, but some people read local languages however they cannot understand and read English. So how do they get the most from the music or understand the lyrical content of the music? Because music, most of the times, we just sing sometimes what you hear, as long as you vibe. What do they call it? As long as you vibe to the rhythm? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was the start. And it also gave birth to me creating the first Zambian music lyrics streaming website. It was ZM Lyrics back then. And that was in my 10th grade. I started working on it. Of course, the cafe, that was the only place I could do that from. But this time now, I learned, okay, I can save that information on my Google Drive, which was pretty awesome. I started doing that so that every time, in case it's deleted, I just go back and download the file and continue there working. So that's how I was teaching myself how to program. It became an obsession. Up to now it is, I would say, because oops. Okay, now it has made us night owls. You know, we don't know what time is the day, what time is time to sleep, unless your body gives up. That's when you go like, okay, your eyes just closed, which is dangerous. But now, of course, at this level, after understanding the impact, I'm able to balance up with exercises and, you know, calculated sleeping time. However, at the time, it was crazy. So yeah, I spent some time learning and applying, and the first website came up. So I also did the same method, followed up, saved up some money for quite some time. So I couldn't eat during school time. After school, I still couldn't eat because I had to be learning and researching. So I'd spend the whole day hungry, yeah? Weird. Then from there, had enough money, and one of the local guys, I think, was doing web hosting by then. So I had to pay him half of the money. I mean, half of the money first, negotiated for some help. And he accepted. So he hosted my platform, which was zmlyrics.com by then. And at the time, I could manually, you know, like get the lyrics and then type them, which was really weird and bad. But as the time went and I improved on my programming skills, I started adding in some functionality that could enable me, like, just decode the song and then just do overall revision of the lyrics. Sometimes ask the content producers for them. It was a good idea. The good thing is that everyone liked it. And I was like, oh, okay, weird. Even one of our local television guys liked it. And they're like, oh, okay, I think we can document this. And that was the beginning of almost everything now, up to my 12th grade. From there on, everything I've built hereafter has been from this path. It's not that fancy or as weird or fictitious as this should be, but yeah, I think for me, that's how the whole journey of software was birthed from.
Okay. That's a very beautiful and wonderful story, Ganya. And so rolling back a little bit, since you started out and you actually taught yourself, what were some of the resources that you used during those times? How did you get to learn? What materials did you use? Did you use PDFs, books, or what was the format of learning?
Wow. Wow. So here's the thing. We go to the cafe, right? Mm-hmm. I had a book, notebook. So after researching, I would write them actually in my book. I hope I still have one of those books. So I could write my own pen. I'm using pen and paper. Like write my code there or the content I grasp, and then I could write code on the paper so that I can, you know, just keep flowing.
Okay.
That was how I used to keep track. Then the mode of learning, of course, was by Googling, but sometimes I would download some books, put them in a flash disk, soft copy, and then whenever I find a computer, plug it in, and then start either learning or revising or something like that. So the modes of I acquiring knowledge, or rather learning by then, was directly reading summarized content from online and PDF. The other mode was by me actually writing the actual code, because I never had a computer. So after going through the experience of having my work deleted, I was forced to start writing in a book. So eventually I could just write in a book, and then, you know, in case it's deleted, I could just start copying what I wrote. So those were the two primary modes of e-learning, just soft copy books, of course, and directly consuming from online, yeah.
Okay.
Asking by then, there was no one to ask, because not even my teacher.
Okay. So meaning that even those people around you didn't have a lot of idea about what programming or software development or anything like that was. If that was the case, how were you able to find a pattern? Because when it comes to software development, during your learning, you might want to start with HTML. You have to go to probably CSS, yeah. And then maybe you jump onto a backend or an interactive language, JavaScript or Python or anything. You didn't have anybody to ask. How did you find your way out? How did you navigate your way that, okay, so after HTML, what I have to learn is CSS. What brought those things together for you?
Okay. So if you remember, the first thing, of course, was research, asking questions. That was a core thing. It somehow gave me a window to understanding what I need to learn to build what exactly. But speaking of the channels, initially, it was just Google.
Okay.
It was just Google. It was just Googling stuff. Then at school, I would ask my teacher, and my teacher would be like, I'll answer you tomorrow. I'll answer you tomorrow, up to today as we are having this call. None of my questions are answered. And then my peers are literally none of my schoolmates had an idea of what that was. They all used to treat this like this alien thing. They'd be like, okay, you can hack, you can hack. I'm like, God, I can't hack. But primarily, the modes of learning and consultation was, I either learn online from a lot of resources, of course, compiled by Google Sage, and then I would pick that up, put in books, and some of it just stays in the brain. I would Google the problem I want to solve first. Okay, so I'd be like, okay, what do I need to use to build this? Then you get a lot of answers online. People tell you have to learn this. Then you're like, okay, what is this? Then you dive into the journey of learning that alien concept or lesson. So that's how I would discover new ways of learning. And from there now, I think if we can fast forward it a bit to 2017, I think. So in 2017, I realized that, okay, I want to learn all these things, and I know basic things, but what if everyone knew how to do this? So with that concept, I somehow formed a mini organization, I call it, where I started, you know, like interacting with my fellow classmates about the idea, and people, a few friends I had, you know, I started introducing them to the idea. Okay, what do you think about this? Some of them liked it. And for those who liked it, we you know, went on there to say, okay, what if we come up with a movement where we start sharing this knowledge to people door to door? Because then we looked at the future of it, and we're like, if people knew how to code and people knew how to program, that means they can build a lot of solutions looking at the way, like, you know, code integrates with either hardware and, excuse me, and all these other resources. And from there, I started this movement. It's Compound Code. I'm sure if you, there's a page on Facebook, it's Compound Code. Probably you might see some images of us trying to teach people that or share that. So we would go from door to door and then start sharing on asking people, you know, would you like to learn how to program? After we found it cool. And then most of them liked it. They liked the idea. And find out some students, their parents would be like, oh, actually it sounds really good. So yeah, sure, you can teach my child. Then we started doing that, except that now it became intensive. So in continuation, you know, I one day, I think I was online, it was at school actually, in my 12th grade. Bongo Hive, it's a local community hub we have, actually. It's a technology community hub we have in Lusaka. And I would say it was the only one by then in Zambia, entrepreneurship and technology hub. So Bongo Hive, they came for a session at school, and they were like, okay, we have Bongo Hive, we do this. And I was like, whoa, there are even people who do this. Because by then, I knew no community space where anyone had an idea of what programming is, or anyone would entertain them, where anyone would understand it. So it was that alien, but it's not that alien. So one day after class, I walked straight to Bongo Hive, and I found Mbuyu. He's a developer too. He's now a developer at Chipakash. That was in 2018, I think. And he introduced me to developer circles. He was like, he was running developer circles by then, so I still a lead. You know, he was like, oh, okay, here at Bongo Hive, we help people navigate the technology stack and the technology space and how to do all these things. He was a developer, and he is still a developer, actually, by profession. And they also, like, introduced me to, you know, the for loop community and all these other communities where people, like, you know, they bring people together who learn how and help each other more, become mentees of their own, and mentor each other. For those who know a lot, they share and all that. So from there, that's how I found the community where I could interact about, you know, this world. So it's like I found my first core mate friends, because initially by default, the people I had were, let's call them normal people. I mean, I'm not saying like people are not normal, but they're great people. Yeah. So, right. So I found a community, like friends I could relate to. And I think that's the time when now I found a space that where I could share, like interact with people who could understand what I'm talking about. And somehow that provided me a space where I could consult and they could give me proper guidance on how to navigate the technology space. Not proper guidance as day-to-day lessons, but you could see, you know, people now who are building these things that, we have other software engineers in Zambia. But most of them were only a few. And by then, developers, most of them were like from university and all that. Except that now the number has grown. We have a lot of non-CS degree holders who are very good software engineers. So with regards to the community, I think that's at this stage now, I'm with a community, of course, but that's how it all started, the journey of connecting me to a community of people with similar interest.
Okay, so when you started out, you didn't have a community, and even the people around you, your environment wasn't supportive. You didn't get anybody to really support you in the journey that you started. What actually motivated you to go on? Because, you know, when you go out and you get this information and you come and share, it looks like everybody was alien to the information you're bringing. Nobody had any idea. And even probably you might have been discouraged by some people, like, what are you doing? So what actually kept you going that, you know, you should still embark on that?
Wow. passion.
Okay.
Like I said, I think it's passion and the vision of, okay, so you find out that as you grow, right, you start learning, then the zeal to solve problems started growing as well. And you start looking at problems from a whole different perspective as you grow, you know? So as I grew older, I understood that, I came to understand that, wait, actually the problem I'm facing is not only me, but it's Africa and a lot of people from Zambia to the rest of the African continent, including the world. But after understanding the power of software and its impact at the economical level, you know, accompanied by the initial zeal of wanting to solve problems for the community, because that was the driving force, if you will. Yeah. So I was like, okay. Anyway, to cut this short, I'll continue it, but there's this fundamental rule that I had. Okay, whilst I'm still alive on Earth, I want to ensure that I become of value, you know, like I'm a valuable species. My existence should somehow add value to the world. So basically, at the core, that was the philosophy driving me. So it gave birth to the whole zeal for learning. And you find out that without a purpose, you can barely do anything for a long time. Because speaking of the time, actually, everyone was against the idea, from my parents to my friends. They were like, you don't know what you're doing, just focus. I did, of course. But the idea of, you know, doing more than the average or what society expects of us was just fascinating, you know. Because with programming, you're not only limited to a curriculum, you can do a whole lot of things. And speaking of a whole lot of things, we're speaking of solving problems, real problems that people are facing. That's the power that technology gave. And you find out that with the initial purpose and goal of saying, okay, I want to be of value to this community. You know, even the day when I'm gone, I want to look back and say, I added value, my existence was worth it. And I think it's something that everyone should ask themselves. Do you want your existence to be worth it? What are you doing on that? You know, your absence should be a loss to the planet to some extent. And without these core fundamental values, we can barely survive and be and move on. Persistence, you cannot apply that concept, or you cannot practice persistence if you don't have the core rule governing your life at the base. So that in itself was a golden rule that kept me going, you know. Because even though everyone disagreed with it, I didn't have a platform or a computer. Actually, including the first system, including when the first time I was building a Lomo system, I didn't have a computer. I was still using the same traditional method. But it's that fundamental rule that kept me awake every day. And it's what kept me awake every night. I couldn't sleep because I understood the fact that I somehow have to be a resource to people's lives. So as a result, you find out that even though someone, you know, discards the idea of programming, whatever it is, I think even though it's so crazy to them, don't believe it, because people like seeing instant results, I still woke up and, you know, moved on. So that was the main reason that kept me awake. I mean, persistent and consistent working on this. The fact that I wanted to be of value on this planet. That's it.
Awesome.
And that gave birth to obsession now. Or passion, I would call it. However, I would like to call it. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to believe that when you started out, you didn't have any idea that the journey you started was something that you could get a career out of, because you started out of passion and the zeal to learn more and the curiosity to know what is behind, you know, what actually made the web works. Okay, so at what point did you realize that, oh, you know, what I've been actually, you know, pursuing is something that I can get a career out of and it can really take me to higher places?
Wow. Okay, so actually I used to hate the idea of, you know, monetizing this.
Okay.
The first incident that happened was, I think, on the Zambian ZM Relix platform. People were like, you can sell this, just sell it, you know. Sell it to some music company and give you a lot of money. I literally said no, I never liked the idea of people. Even now, I don't like the idea of selling stuff or things or solutions. I believe, you know, whatever it is that I build, somehow it has to serve its purpose without costing people money. But as you grow, you start learning certain things, of course, and things are monetizable. That's just how it works. But at the base, the first time I realized that, okay, I can make money out of this was when I grew up, I think. I was like, okay, I needed money to invest in my resources, to invest, for example, in internet. And then people share, no matter people, whatever it is that you do, even though you don't know about it, people somehow, I don't know how they know, but they just share. The next time you hear it, someone is like, oh, I know you do this. I know you do that.
Okay.
You know, there's like this ripple effect that you can't understand. So we find out people would approach me, say, hey, can you make a website for a company? I'm like, oh, okay, sure, I'll make one for you. Then I'll do that for free. And then someone will be like, oh, okay, how much can we pay you? I'm like, no, it's okay. I'm like, no, we can pay you something. And then they'll give me a number and I'll be like, whoa, okay. They'll give me this handsome figure. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So why not? So, you know, yeah, I would do that and then they would pay me. And I'm like, how do I get paid for doing something I'm obsessed with? It's something I would do for free. Someone says to pay you. And then after realizing that, it came into a situation where, oh, okay, it was an anchor, somehow accelerated me now in making it easier for me to buy the tools I needed to develop and all that. And it continued. So another instance that happened was when when we're getting started with Alamo System, own management and accounting software. Initially, I was with my friend. Not I think, but I was with my friend. He's running a money lending business. So he's a co-founder too. And since by default, I don't know, I have this thing whereby when I look at what I look at, I want to see where the problem is and how we can break it down or solve it. It can be a process, it can be an ant working, but you want to find a better way on how we can make it easier or anything to happen. So I proposed that, okay, you are having all these paperwork difficulties. Actually, by then he was using Excel, but he didn't know much how to use it. But still, even though he was using Excel, he had difficulties when the computer crashes. He didn't know how to work around that. And then you find out that he couldn't get any software because nothing was matching what he wanted to do. And I was like, okay, great. This is a problem. And then he was also facing issues in keeping track of the record, the finances, the people he was working with. You know, he can't trace how transactions are happening. So I proposed a solution that, okay, I can build something for you. Then you can have all these manual processes. You can just tell me how you work. Then you can just be clicking a few buttons, you enter data, and then everything is happening automatically. And you like the idea. So I built the first version of Alamo System. And then I went to him. I was like, hey, have a look. How does this work? He screamed like, whoa, this is exactly how it should work. This is awesome. So I started using it. Then every day he was like preaching about it. I'm like, oh, weird. Then he was like, okay, is it possible we can add this? I was like, oh yeah, even this? Yeah. So it started scaling like that. I started adding features to it. Then one day he was like, you know what? Can we sell this? I'm like, no. Actually, I proposed the idea. I was like, hey, how about we give it to other money lenders just within our compound, our community? You know, like they can use it also so that they don't go through what you went through. He was like, nope, let's try selling it. I went against the idea, you know. I just didn't like it. So he was like, no, let's try to sell it. I was like, okay, it's your own thing, do it. If they say no, then it's your own fault. We'll give it out to them for free. So we tried like about five or so money lenders within. They all said yes, and they all paid instantly. I was mind blown. So I was like, okay, we can grow this thing because a lot of people now start saying, okay, we need this feature, we need that feature. And I was like, okay, we can make it a startup or a company or something. Then we agreed to that idea. And so this whole process now, from the very first time when people just proposed to pay me, up to the time when we started developing Alamo System. And of course, as you grow, you realize that, okay, you need somehow to get some finance to power up your learning processes. You have to somehow buy tools so that you can learn. You have to buy environment or space, visit and all these things. Then, you know, it all just started coming together. But the goal wasn't really monetizing or making money out of it. That was just something that came along the way, you know. But somehow, if I didn't do that, I think the money couldn't have come. But the initial issue was about solving problems. That's it. So how I came to realize that I can make money out of programming was when people started offering money off the solutions that I was building.
Okay, that's very awesome. So rolling back a little bit, when we were able to, you know, start out and then learn by your own, carry your own, you were just doing everything by yourself, okay? Most of your learning was, like you said, in isolation and doing things often by yourself. Is it the same till now, or now you have to work in collaboration with other people? Have you had opportunity to work among teams? And if you did, how was the experience to when you were working by yourself or alone?
Oh, thank you. I think that's a very good question. Now, I think due to growth and the magnitude of projects I work with, I still work in isolation most of the times, but I also work with teams. I've worked with teams to build a lot of business products. And because you find out some things are too huge and they have to be finished within a specific time, and somehow there are people who are working on them, or either, you know, you're working on them, then you need to share that responsibility to enable for you, in order for you rather to deliver that product or solution quicker. So currently, I have worked actually with a lot of people. And from the initial concept of sharing knowledge, and after now reaching at this level where I have access to a community, I found myself in situations where I collaborate a lot with other people who have the same goal or same vision of solving problems. Like that, it makes the work less, less of a burden and less difficult. So somehow, to a certain extent, you can't be a jack of all trades. That's just how it works. When you're learning, of course, you begin by yourself. That is a fundamental thing, and it's very important, because the pressure you go through, it's somehow a key discipline that will enable you to work on huge projects. You know, so currently I still work in isolation, and initially it was very difficult and very, very challenging because I had no one to consult. But now, when you're working with teams and other people, you know the piece of something that you don't know, your colleague or friend knows it better. So it's easier to call on someone and say, "Hey, how do you solve this? I'm stuck here." You know, someone might have gone through the same challenge, and what they'll do is they'll render a hand and assist you. Of course, for example, on platforms like Alamo System, AfriLending, which is this, and a lot of other business softwares that I'm building that I've worked on, I build them in isolation. I don't know. I work best when I'm alone most of the times, unless if it's a product where, you know, it's shared. I also work best when, you know, in collaboration. So we can share responsibilities, say, okay, I know you have to do this, and I know I have to do this. So like that, I can now isolate myself and go and work, you know. I can go in a factory where I do my own work, because there's internet, so you're still not alone somehow.
Okay.
Because there's internet, and online you can research and ask questions. However, there's still a need for physical interaction with either people or product managers. And you need, in order for you to build projects, you somehow have to stay in sync, because people from different backgrounds have to communicate, and you have to communicate with them in order for you to successfully build what was supposed to be built according to how it should be built. So there are instances, and in instances I work with teams, and I think it's somehow good. It's based, because it doesn't bring all the burden on you. And one of the skills actually that almost every software engineer or aspiring software engineer has to learn is they have to learn to collaborate with people. It's quite hard sometimes, because software is one thing where, okay, you have a blueprint in your head, you know where you're going, actually, you know how you get there. So you somehow also have to learn how to understand how people are and how people's brains work so that you can be able to understand other people's code and be able to see their line of blueprint of thought so that you can connect your piece together somehow. So you have to learn how to work by yourself in isolation, because there are instances when that is important. Also, you have to learn to collaborate with people and be able to merge the two thoughts perfectly well. So currently I'm working in both situations, and both of them are perfect, I can say. I can't complain, actually.
Awesome. So, all right, so let's go into awards and the platforms that you've had opportunity to get onto because of the opportunity you had breaking into tech. Have you had any awards? Have you ever had any opportunity to go somewhere that you thought, or you think you would not have had that opportunity if it were not for the opportunity that you had to, you know, break into the tech industry?
Oh, awards.
Now, I know you've been featured on other platforms. You can actually talk about some of them so that we know that, tech doesn't come with only, you know, maybe a physical cash, but it also opens doors and opportunities for you. Yeah,
precisely. So one thing I would like to say before I go into that is the fact that I think, first of all, that shouldn't be the focus of anyone, because it will really distract you from producing the results.
Okay.
When you focus more on the results or the personal gain, or somehow recognition, to make it a bit simpler. Awards. Okay, so in terms of opportunities that have been extended to me, including participating in certain programs, I think first I'll just start with the recent one. Okay, let's just say Zicta. I was privileged for one of my ideas to be amongst the competitions that were happening in 2017. So 2017, I was participating with the Zambia Information and Communication Technology, Zicta. Authority rather, Zicta. So our idea came out amongst the top five out of about 600 or so. So that came as a result, of course, of initially having the zeal to solve problems. So it appeared to be that idea was quite a good solution at the time and still now and still for the future. So through software development and, you know, curiosity for solving problems, I was privileged to be invited to participate in that program and somehow made it to the top five. And also, in terms of being featured, I haven't been featured on a lot of blogs because I usually say no. I really hate the idea of being on. I was somehow bullied a lot in school for knowing stuff. So I don't like being a lot of people knowing about me. So, however, I have been privileged more especially to participate in Zambian FinTech. It's a program that was powered by UNCDF, Bongo Hive, Zambia. Bank of Zambia, rather. Sorry, okay. Bank of Zambia and a lot of other organizations, and through that. It has also extended chances for me to be featured on the Bongo Hive website and, you know, as a reference to a lot of people. I don't like it. I don't like talking about it. It makes my body feel weird, like shiver. But the latest one of the more is the fact that, okay, I was featured on the African Dream. It's quite an amazing platform. So African Dream is it's one of the platforms that I think was started by people who care more about Africa and its future. So I was privileged to find myself, to be noticed by the community through people I didn't even know. But of course, it started from the idea of wanting to solve problems. And recently I was blogged on, and it was quite interesting. The feeling was good. So that's the African Dream. And other recognitions of software, I don't know, unless if I go back and take a read, of course, there are some documentaries and other videos and other platforms, but I don't pay much attention to those because anything that puts my picture on the public is weird. I have to start getting used to it by default, you know, because yeah. Somehow if you want to reach out a lot of people with your solutions, they have to know you. But one more thing I can say is all of these things do not come as a result of me wanting to somehow be written on or to be given as an example, but it came from the fact that I'm always curious to solve problems. And whenever you solve problems, somehow the world connects you to people. It wants you to shine to people. Yeah, that's about it, I think. Yeah. Okay. I don't give a fuck. Excuse me, of course.
I think some of the reasons why we wanted to share something like this is because, you know, your story is a story that can inspire people, and getting your message out there and people actually getting to know your story, they are going to be really inspired. For example, if you look at people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, who have also, you know, prevailed and been successful in the industry, there are stories that have inspired a lot of people to also take that step. Because maybe somewhere, you know, a child, a young person would just one day get to know the story about Bill Gates, how he was just sitting in his room somewhere and built, you know, these things and collaborated with his friends. And now their solutions are solutions that we are using a lot, you know, globally. So I think being featured on platforms like that and, you know, getting that recognition, in effect, it's not really bad because it makes you get opportunity to impact life that you yourself probably you might not be aware of. Someone would hear from your story, and it's a story that is going to change your life forever, you know. So I think it's a very good thing that some of the solutions that you built were able to get that recognition. That means that they were very good solutions that impacted the society and helped solve one problem or the other, you know?
Thank you. Actually, I would like to acknowledge the fact that it's a huge opportunity. It's the reason why sometimes it's a bit, it makes you nervous because it's like there are a lot of people there who are building a lot of tools, but they're not recognized. It's not that they don't want to, I mean, they will, that's the beauty. You know, whatever you do in isolation, if it's good for the community and the people, it will come out and people know about it, you know. And for example, like, I don't even know how I got, for example, the African Dream, I don't even know how they got to see me, but it was one of those of like, oh, weird. I screamed, I was inside, I was like, oh, dad, we're featured on the African Dream. Like, oh, what's up? Like, weird. So yeah, it's quite a huge opportunity. And I'm truly honored myself. I'm really honored. Even right now, I'm like, oh, okay. Right here talking to you, I literally, who knew? Yeah. Who knew? But yeah. All through, like, people who are out there, you know, there are people who are out there who are willing to share your story. You know, there are people who are like you, and they've worked so hard to create platforms that can enable, you know, you to inspire others. And one of them is platforms like this. And for me, I would say it's a real privilege because without that, I don't think anyone would have known about that. And somehow helps, not somehow, but it does help, you know, whatever solution you have created, reach out to the masses, which is the whole purpose of creating solutions, you know, let it save people. And you can't do that by yourself. So it's truly an honor and a privilege.
That's true. So now you've been in the industry for quite some time, you know, what a problem or where, you know, if you step, there's going to be a problem and you've been able to navigate your way around. What would be your message or your advice to someone who is interested breaking into the tech industry? Probably they have a degree, but not in not in tech, maybe in marketing, in other fields, but they want to, you know, break into the tech industry, because generally most of the ideas that people have is that, you know, becoming a developer or having any career Holding any career in tech is a very difficult thing, and it's impossible if you don't have a computer science degree, if you didn't come from that background. So coming from a non-technical background and even starting out on your own, teaching yourself and then successfully coming out as a developer, what will be your message to someone who wants or desires to have a career in the tech industry?
Actually, I don't have to think about it because I live with it almost every day. And it's not a motivational speech or talk. But the truth is, okay, one of the things that we have to realize is software is just a platform or a medium that enables you to somehow solve a problem. And it's one of the rare skills where, you know, you literally don't have to go through an extensive training in order for you to, you know, it doesn't have to be written somewhere that you are a software engineer, mm-hmm. because it's a practical field and practical oriented, like solution based field. So like that, it provides you with limitless opportunities to put to solve any problem and put it out there and put the solution out there for people. So whoever is probably might be listening sometime in the future or now, one of the things I can say is obsession is key. Don't listen to people who are telling you do what everyone is doing, because one fact has remained true. In isolation, that's where great ideas are built. I'm not saying everyone should be isolated, but what I mean is independent thought. Okay, spend time, listen to ideas, listen to your inner ideas. Whatever it is that you're doing, as long as it has positive impact on people around you, do it. Do it. Because somehow, somewhere, someone will use whatever solution you have built to better their lives. So my word is keep on working on whatever it is that you're working on. If they tell you it's not going to work out and you listen, you turn out exactly like everyone else. So everyone else who's done something of extraordinary or everyone else who's impacted someone's life, they had to somehow go through a rough patch of learning, you know, making mistakes. Don't be afraid of making mistakes. You can't know if it's wrong if you don't make a mistake. Of course, it has to be logical. And it has to be with, you know, with inspiration of trying to build a solution or something better. So your obsession is key. And every day and night, don't you give up, because actually giving up would be, for me, I feel like it would be the last thing of me. I feel like the day I'll pivot and stop, you know, trying to learn and expand and build something or a solution for people, I feel like that would be the last day of me. So work on ideas in an isolation state, even though you don't have enough resources. Somehow, somewhere, nature will connect you to the right people, right place. You know, as it is said, there's nothing like overnight success. It all takes an enormous amount of work that people don't see. So compounding work, you know, one brick at a time, work on the idea, and don't listen to people when they tell you, like, you can't do this here, you're in Africa, you're in Zambia, or you're in whatever country you are. You know, look at how everyone else is. You cannot do this if you're in the West. The West was at one point just like your state or your country. So the moment you give up on generations. So keep on working on whatever it is you are working. It can be in tech or not in tech, but obsession is key. It knows no limits.
Okay, thank you very much for your message. That I think that's a very good advice and a very heavy message that, you know, people would, take. And if they would implement that, I think a lot of change is going to come in their life. How can we find you? Find you? Which platforms are you on? You can actually leave that your handles out there if people want to reach out to you.
Oh, thank you. So on Facebook, Blessed Jason Mwanza. I like using my full names. And on Twitter, it's at Mwanza BJ. Mm-hmm. That's MWANZABJ. So if you can't find Blessed Jason Mwanza in like Fu, I don't like, I use all of them in Fu everywhere. Then you can search for at Mwanza BJ. That's on Twitter, Instagram, it's Mwanza BJ. Facebook, LinkedIn, it's Blessed Jason Mwanza, and GitHub too. I mean, GitHub is cool for the devs. Yeah, we can share projects, work on some cool solutions, I guess. Yeah, otherwise, I think that's how we can get in touch. I'll be really glad if we, like, someone can reach out and then we can pick it up from there. So awesome. Blessed Jason Mwanza or Mwanza BJ, either of these two, you'll be able to get in touch with me.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason, for joining us today. Do you think there's anything you want to get out there that I actually didn't bring? You can actually do that.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate for the opportunity and your inspiring work as well that you're doing. It's somehow pushing a lot of us to say, okay, I think we are not alone trying to somehow do the future for Africa and our communities too. So I'm really, really honored and such a pleasure to be you know, on the platform here discussing with you about the importance of the little, you know, improvements where we are adding to the community. Thank you a lot.
Thank you very much, Jason. You had a very wonderful story, and I know for sure that it's going to impact a lot of people to make that bold step, because most of the times what I've been holding us back is taking the first step. That is the most important and critical thing. And you realize that when you make the first step, a lot of things would come and fall in place for your goal. So thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your time wherever you are.
Thank you a lot. Happy hacking.
Okay, bye.